Got one note of housekeeping before we get started here as the choir is making their way back in. For those of you ladies who are interested in coming to Morning Light starting Thursday, you'll notice in your bulletin the time. It says to come at 9. It starts at 9. You're welcome to come at 9 if you want, but I've been told that it does indeed not start until 9:30. So come at 9 if you want, spend some time fellowshipping, but the Bible study itself begins at 9:30. Just wanted to make sure everyone was on the same page there. So I want to welcome everyone again, especially our guests. For those of you who don't worship with us regularly, over the last several weeks, we've been working through a sermon series out of the Gospel of Mark. And the title of that series, which you probably already saw on the cover of your bulletin or on the inside flap, is The Untouchables. And so basically, this series has been about these individual persons in the Gospel of Mark whose paths crossed Jesus's. But it wasn't just any person. These are the ones who, up until that point in their lives, had been avoided. These are the ones who had been reviled, the ones who had been written off by the world. But one thing they noticed is that when they crossed paths with Jesus, Jesus didn't avoid them. Jesus didn't see them and then make an intentional effort to go the other way. No, Jesus reached out to them, and he touched them, and he changed their lives forever. And we here at EMC believe that that's something that he's still doing today. And so with that in mind, I invite you to open your Bibles if you brought them this morning. We're going to look at another story here from Mark. We're going to be in the fifth chapter today. It's another one of those a little bit lengthy passages, but you'll see as we get into the text here why it's worth reading the whole thing. And so I'm going to begin in verse 21. I'm going to read all the way down to verse 43. Verse 21 of Mark chapter 5. Jesus got into the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake, where a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. "My little daughter is dying," he said. "Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live." Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years she had spent everything she had to pay them, but she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe, for she thought to herself, "If I can just touch his robe, I will be healed." Immediately, the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out of him. So he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my robe?" His disciples said to him, "Look at this crowd pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me?" But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. And then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell on her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over." While he was still speaking to her, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, and they told him, "Your daughter is dead. There's no use troubling the teacher now." But Jesus overheard them and said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just have faith." Then Jesus stopped the crowd and wouldn't let anyone go with him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And when they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw much commotion and weeping and wailing. He went inside and asked, "Why all this commotion and weeping? The child isn't dead. She's only asleep." The crowd laughed at him, but he made them all leave. And he took the girl's father and mother and his three disciples into the room where the girl was lying. And holding her hand, he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And the girl, who was 12 years old, immediately stood up and walked around. They were overwhelmed and totally amazed. And Jesus gave them strict orders not to tell anyone what had happened. And then he told them to give her something to eat. Now, this story is an example of a tactic that the gospel writer Mark uses occasionally throughout his gospel, and that is to basically tell a story within another story. So what he's doing when he tells these stories that are kind of interwoven into one another, he combines two accounts of two very different people to draw the attention of the reader to a particular point he's trying to make. Surely the two people that Mark has described here and their scenarios could not have been more different from one another. You have this, on one hand, this high-profile Jewish leader, this leader, this well-known and respected figure in the community, this person who was part of the establishment. People looked up to him, and people followed him, and people listened to him when he talked. And yet his daughter is sick and dying. And then on the other hand, you have this woman. And you feel immediately the difference between her and the man, because her name isn't even mentioned. So this story about an important somebody gives way to a story about a very unimportant nobody. This woman who has a name that's not even worth mentioning here for the story. And worse than that, what else we know about her isn't very good either. She has had this condition where she's been bleeding for 12 years. The bleeding won't stop. The doctors have no solution for her. She's spent all of her money. She's done everything she knows to do, and yet her condition has only gotten worse. So here are these two stories that Mark has combined together. You have the story of one who is followed and respected and desirable, and then you have her, the one who everyone ignores, the one that people avoid, the one that everyone is tired of seeing. There's that bleeding woman again. And as different as these two people are, there's something yet that they have in common. And it is this. Both are moved by a deep inward conviction that somehow, in the midst of all the stuff they're facing, Jesus can help. Both of them have exhausted all options. Think about what they're facing here in this scenario. The woman has seen every doctor there is, countless bandages. Imagine having to change a bandage over and over, day after day, month after month, year after year for 12 years. Countless bandages. Countless doctors, countless wasted trips to see somebody that could offer help. Countless medical bills. She has exhausted all options. She has no one left to go to. And then there's Jairus, a man completely different in every way except this. He has no other options as well. His 12-year-old daughter is at the brink of death, and no one can help her. And so while you have these two very different people who are both experiencing the same type of situation in the sense that both have exhausted all their options, they are both now willing to take risks. For the woman, it's a risk to make her way through a crowd. Remember, the crowd is pressing around Jesus. They're touching him from every side. And she's finding a way to fight through the crowd, to get between what stands between her, to get past what stands between her and Jesus, that she might just touch just the fringe of his robe. And then you have Jairus taking risks. All of his peers were in opposition to Jesus. All those up to this point in Mark's gospel, it is the religious leaders are the ones who are undercutting Jesus. They're ones that are challenging Jesus. We know from back in chapter 4, they're even plotting to have him killed. And yet here's one who's willing to risk his status and his reputation and perhaps his job and his friendships. He's not there to confront Jesus. He's there to swallow his pride and take a risk, take a chance. So by telling this story within a story, Mark has done something very skillful. Mark has managed to draw the reader's attention, and that's you and me, away from what separates these individuals and to what they have in common. Because what these two individuals have in common is a genuine need and a genuine faith. They genuinely believe that Jesus can meet their needs. Mark knows that everyone who would ever read his gospel can relate to that. Every person in here who's ever drawn breath has had a need of some kind. Perhaps you brought your needs with you this morning. You've sat through the beautiful preschool presentation. You chuckled when maybe someone grabbed a microphone or their voice rose above the others. But still nagging in the back of your mind is that thing. that thing that has occupied your attention, that thing that has caused you anxiety and stress and perhaps a boatload of heartache, that thing that has exhausted you. You brought that in here this morning. All of us have needs in life. All of us experience various crises and stressful situations. All of us have desires. All of us have hopes and dreams. All of us are searching for provision and fulfillment. We're looking for meaning in life. We're looking for purpose in life. But too often, we find ourselves searching for the meaning and the fulfillment and the purpose in all the wrong things. We hope that if we can just have a successful enough career, if I can just get that bonus, if I can just do that thing that earns me the praise of my peers, if I can just get ahead in life, if I can just get that entertainment, whatever it is that we're searching for, yearning for, to bring us satisfaction and bring fulfillment, we think that those things are what will satisfy our souls. But I think the story, the first lesson of this story in Mark, is that at the end of the day, nothing but Jesus can satisfy the deepest needs of our lives. And God has this interesting tendency to allow us to experience circumstances that bring us to the point where we realize that nothing else will do. God uses the circumstances in our lives to draw our attention to the fact that there is no hope apart from Him. That none of those things can satisfy. None of those solutions are what we need. None of those things can bring fulfillment. And so just like the two in this story, God wants us to realize that only Jesus can fulfill us. Only Jesus can meet our needs. Only Jesus can give us what our hearts truly desire. And for those who dare to step out in faith, to take the risk, to fight through what separates us from Jesus, to even say, I don't care what people think about me, I don't care what people say about me, those who are willing to risk it all will discover that a little bit of Jesus is greater than a whole lot of anything else. And those who put their faith in Him will never, ever be disappointed. But there's another thing that Mark wants us to see here, and that is this. Having faith for Jesus in a moment is not enough. In Mark's story, this moment of triumph where Jesus heals this woman, this miraculous aspect of this story, this thing that you hoped was coming and you can't even believe that it happened if you take it serious. This moment of triumph immediately gives way to a moment of despair. Look at verse 35 again, if you will. While he was still speaking to this woman that he has healed, that he's pronounced peace over her life, he's declared her suffering has come to an end. This moment of climax and triumph. At that moment, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, and they told him, "Your daughter is dead." So while Jesus is healing one person, the other has died. And so for Jairus, waiting for Jesus, this man who never seems to be in a hurry, has proved disastrous. Now, I've been a Christian since I was a child, and over the years, let me tell you, I've experienced, like all of you, but for those of you who have followed Jesus with all of your lives, you know that life is full of stuff. I've had countless scenarios where I faced an insurmountable crisis of some kind. I had something that came into my life. It brought pain and frustration and heartache, and I had no answers to the questions. I had no idea how I was going to get out of it. I had seemingly no hope. And I turned to Jesus, and I asked him to come and fix the problem, to come and give me a solution, to answer my questions, to do this or to do that. And what did Jesus do? Well, seemingly nothing. It's frustrating. It induces anxiety when we turn to God to bring a solution to our problem, and it doesn't seem like God is there. It doesn't seem like perhaps that He even cares if He is. And we're tempted to give up hope. And I think there's a lot of people, perhaps maybe some of you who came in here this morning, who have come at some point in your life to Jesus. You had a crisis, you had a situation, something that produced anxiety or fear or stress or hurt, and you came to Him in a moment of faith, and you asked him to do this, this, or that. And yet you found yourself not getting the answer you wanted, not getting it definitely in the timing that you wanted. And so, you walked away from him. Jesus sometimes is slow when we're in a hurry. Sometimes he's quiet when we need to hear him say something. Sometimes Jesus is nowhere to be found when we need him the most. At least it seems that way. And if we're honest, as we think about what it is about that gives us frustration and causes us to lose hope and to get into despair, it comes down to the fact that we have a tendency to treat Jesus as just some means to an end. I have a need, I have an unfulfilled thing, I have something that I want him to do, so I'm going to tell him to come and do that thing in my life, and if he doesn't do it in the way that I want or in the timing that I want, well, I'll just look somewhere else. We have this inclination towards treating Jesus as the means to an end. I want you to look at something in the text here in verse 30. Did you notice the question Jesus asked after the woman was healed? This question has perplexed me for years. Verse 30. When Jesus realized that the healing power had gone out from him, he turned around and said, "Who touched my robe? Who touched me?" I mean, really, why does he even care? Why does he care who touched? Everyone's touching him. Right? He's trying to walk from here to there. He's trying to make it to the home of this synagogue leader. And everyone is pressing and crowding and touching and grabbing and trying to get something from him. And yet one touch stood out. And Jesus stopped. Why does he care? Why does he call her out? Why does he demand to know who it was? I suspect that maybe while she came to Jesus looking for healing, Jesus had something even more in mind for her. You see, from Jesus' perspective, the healing was not the end. The healing was not the end. For Jesus, the healing was an opportunity to create a connection, a face-to-face connection from him to her. Jesus didn't come into the world to just pass out miracles like candy at a parade. He came to connect with people, even the untouchable people like her, to establish a relationship, to draw her life into his life as he steps from his life into her. And we allow the situations in life to cause us to come to him for solutions. When Jesus says, "I am the solution. You're coming to me for a need. I am your deepest need. You want to come and use me for something that you think will benefit you. Nothing will benefit you more than coming into my face-to-face relationship with me." His desire is to be more than just some occasional means to an end for you. His desire is to be your end. And I promise you, that's greater than anything he can do for you. Who is Jesus to you this morning? Whether you are new today, or whether you've been here a couple times, or whether you've been coming here since you were a little baby, and some of you have, who is Jesus to you? Is he a means to an end? Is he someone that you can occasionally come to in a time of need? A means to some end, something you need him to do, in the timing that you want, in the way that you want? Or have you allowed him to be the center of your life? The focal point of everything that you are, the focal point of everything that you do. You see, the challenge of faith is not to have it for just a moment. The challenge of faith is to have it and live by it moment by moment. So while Jesus is giving all this attention to this bleeding woman, Jairus has his own crisis of faith. The messengers have shown up. Remember from verse 35, they show up, they said, "Hey, look, the time that you took delaying, waiting on Jesus, your daughter has died. So there's no point in waiting for him anymore." He gets this the worst news he could imagine. Plus this insistence from his messengers to give up hope. And Jesus hears what they're saying. And he says words that resonate to this day.
He overhears them and he says, "Do not fear." Jesus wants Jairus and everyone in the crowd and the woman and all of us today to hear him say, "As long as you're with me, there's no need to worry." Even though it seems like time has run out, it seems like all hope is lost, it seems like there's nothing left for you but despair, trust me, not your circumstances. Trust me. And this woman, who at one moment was an obstacle to Jairus' faith, suddenly, if you have the right perspective, she becomes an object lesson for it. Jesus could take this woman, who he not only healed, but he brought himself into face-to-face contact with her, and he said, "Do you see what just happened here? Did you see what I just did? You've heard this news, and you're tempted to despair. You came to me in faith, but now it's going away. But look what I just did. Every year of your 12-year-old precious daughter's life, this woman has been bleeding until now. Because I healed her in an instant." And so the challenge for you is not to start with faith as you come to me. It's to keep on believing. And that's the verb tense right here in the Greek. Jesus doesn't say, "Believe for a moment." It says, "Keep on believing. Don't stop. Don't lose hope. You started out well, but it's time to keep on going. You're tempted to fear the worst, to expect the worst thing to be the case. But guess what? With me, there's hope." And Jesus alone, in their lives and in ours, no matter how dire our circumstances, he is that bridge that can move us from despair to hope. Jesus alone can do that. So no matter what you're facing, no matter what you brought with you in here this morning, no matter what you're thinking about, even as you're listening to my voice, Jesus is the answer to your questions. He is the bridge that moves you from despair to hope. He is the only real option that you have in life. He is both the means and the end. And he wants to come right into the center of your stuff. Right in the middle of your crisis. Right in the middle of your situation. Right in the middle of your life. And he wants to tell you, "Son, daughter, I offer you peace. You don't need to be afraid. Do not fear. Don't stop trusting. I am all you need." It's true that a little bit of Jesus is greater than a whole lot of anything else. But I encourage you this morning to not settle for just a little bit of Jesus in your life. This miracle that we just read about of Jesus raising this little girl back to life, it's, if we were to read a little bit into the broader context of where it falls in Mark's gospel, it's sort of a crescendo miracle. So for the last chapter or so, chapter and a half, Mark has been telling us one miracle after the other. And you have this incredible miracle in chapter 4 of Jesus and the disciples. They're out on the sea and the storm is overtaking the boat and it looks like they're going to drown. And Jesus stands and with a word, the wind and the waves are still. Jesus is all-powerful over creation, over nature. And then we see this story of Jesus confronting the man possessed by a legion of demons. Which, by the way, a legion in the Roman army was 6,000 soldiers strong. It's a lot of demons. What possible hope does this man have in the face of such opposition? In Jesus, he has plenty of hope. Because Jesus takes the evil in the man and he sends it to the bottom of the sea. Jesus is all-powerful over nature and supernature. And then we come to the bleeding woman. No hope for her. No solutions for her. No doctor can heal her. No prescription can make her whole. And 12 years of misery ended in a second. Jesus is powerful over disease. And then comes the little girl. This crescendo of miracles. He's powerful over nature. He's powerful over the spiritual realm. He's powerful over disease. And he's powerful over death itself. And this miracle not only definitively and once and for all demonstrates Jesus' superiority and lordship over all things, it also shows us, the reader, what Jesus wants to do and what Jesus has to do in our lives. I have a confession to you.
I love the movie Moana. Has anybody seen Moana? I know Enoch likes Moana. He does. I love that movie. I love Maui. I love the little coconut pirates on their pirate ship. I even like the music. We listen to it all the time in our car, and I love hearing my kids sing the music. It's hilarious. They know every word to every song. I don't know how they do it. I love that movie, but there's something that has bothered me about this movie. So in the beginning of this movie, there's this wonderful people that live on this beautiful island. It's like a picture of heaven. Just the ocean out there and the coconut trees and the little huts that they live in. Their way of life is so friendly. Everyone's happy. They're getting along. It's just like a picture of paradise on earth. Until the problem. And the problem is this. There's something that has happened somewhere out in the world that has caused death and decay to come to their precious island. And you see it visualized. When you look from this aerial view down into the water, you see this creeping black stuff coming into the island, and it's killing their coconuts, and it's causing the fish to go away, and they're starting to realize at this rate, the whole thing's in jeopardy. The whole island's going to die. And here's my problem with that. As I think about real life, the problem is we are tempted to view life kind of like that. We kind of think that all the real trouble that we have to face is just something out there somewhere. And so we think that our lives would just be okay so long as we can avoid that stuff. If I can just get away from those things that want to come in and make life hard, life will be great. Everything's hunky-dory. And so we come to Jesus when one of those things comes into our life and causes trouble. But the truth is, in real life, the greatest problem that you and I face is not something encroaching from the outside. The biggest problem you and I face is that there's darkness on the inside. That's our problem. Bleeding for 12 years is terrible. But it's nothing compared to a heart ravaged by sin and rebellion and brokenness. And we come to Jesus wanting him to patch up our scrapes and fix our trivial little problems to make us happy and comfortable. But what we really need is for him to bring our dead bodies and souls back to life. Ravi Zacharias said it best, Jesus does not offer to make bad people good. That's not what he came for. Ravi Zacharias says, Jesus offers to make dead people alive. Mark chapter 5, verse 30 says that healing power went out of Jesus. Everywhere Jesus went, he was giving. He gave of himself, whether it was late at night, whether it was early in the morning, whether he's walking down the road or he's sitting at the dinner table, whether he's at home or whether he's abroad, Jesus gave of himself. He's lavish with the giving of himself. And his life is what he came to give you and me. His life is what he wants to give. It's not something he just gave for you. It's something he offers to you. And he says, I stand at that door and I knock. I'm knocking on the door of your life. And I don't want to just come and fix your little thing and then leave you alone. I want to come in. And I want you to feast on me. And you can do that in an instant. You can do that perhaps even this morning. If you've never seen Jesus as the one who can satisfy the deepest longings of your soul, I invite you by faith to see him as that this morning. And as the worship team is coming up to bring a conclusion to our service before we transition to our time of feasting, I invite you to come and feast on Jesus. You can come up here and you can kneel at this altar and you can come face to face with the one who alone can satisfy your deepest longings, the one who can give you meaning and purpose and fulfillment, the one who can bring you who are dead in your sins and trespasses back to life. That invitation is for you. You know, I was in Ohio a couple of weeks ago with my family and my brother Ryan, whose house we stay at. They have a brand new little kitten. His name is Roscoe. Roscoe is hilarious. Roscoe is real spunky. He's just always looking for someone to chase or something to play with. And Roscoe's Christmas present this year, you'll love this, his Christmas present was a laser pointer. That's what they bought him. They bought him a laser pointer.
And every night, after dinner, when things are starting to wind down and everyone perhaps moves into the family room to finish the evening, my brother Ryan breaks out the laser pointer and he and Roscoe play. And Roscoe chases that thing everywhere. I mean, up the wall, under the couch, between people's legs, tripping people up. It's hilarious. And we'll sit there. We sat there for hours, it seemed, watching Roscoe chase the laser pointer. He was obsessed with the laser pointer. But you know what I did? I carry a laser pointer in my computer bag. So I went and got my laser pointer. And when Roscoe saw a second laser pointer, he was stunned. It just completely blew his mind. Roscoe was, I'm telling you, this cat who hadn't sat still for 10 seconds since I got there was crippled by indecision. Crippled. He didn't know what to do. Now, some of you right now may be feeling like Roscoe. You're crippled with indecision. You came here to go through a worship service. Perhaps you were invited by a friend or a relative. Perhaps you just come here every week and you're used to just being here. You wanted to have a nice church service. You wanted to have a nice meal. But you know what? Jesus is calling you. And I'll tell you, if you become like that cat, you miss your opportunity perhaps. But you can choose to get your eyes off whatever you had your eyes on before and fix them on Jesus. So as Jeff and the team lead us to close the service, I invite you, as they sing, as we stand, and you can go ahead and stand right now, we're going to sing with them. If you feel drawn to Jesus, if you want to come and fall at his feet, like the persons in this story, I invite you now, come now and give your lives to him. Whether you've trusted him just once or whether you want to trust him with all that you are, this is the time for you to respond in faith.
The song is called Healer, and talks about just what we were talking about, Sean was talking about there in the message, that Jesus is our healer. We say, I believe you're my healer, I believe you're all I need. This is how it goes. Let's sing it together. I believe you're my healer, I believe you are all I need. I believe you're my portion. I believe you're more than enough for me. Jesus, you're all I need. You hold my every moment.
You hold my every. All my rage and cease. You walk with me through fire and heal all my disease. I trust.